following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Take a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now, let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, episode number 158. 58, 59?
8.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I thought you had 9.
It's clearly 158, Colin.
Well, excuse me. My apologies. Welcome in, Colin Lacey, alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed. It was a tough day on Saturday, but we will dive back into see what 2021 Georgia Southern football had in store on this week's edition. Get you a recap of Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball over the last week. I feel like I haven't seen this team in a month. It's only been 2 weeks, but because of football having to be away for 2 weeks, you kind of lose touch after a while.
This is definitely the time of the season where we lose track of time.
There's no doubt about that.
And then at the end of basketball, start of baseball, that's the worst overlap, but this is the more commonly known overlap, just because so many more guys in what we do, they're more football-basketball guys. Yeah. Not a whole lot of guys do baseball.
Very true. But very true. But we will dive into anything and everything this week, but we start with Georgia Southern football, and it started out to be an interesting weekend up at the Rock anyway when we got moved to the deer stand. But Georgia Southern and Appalachian State, it was a 7-0 ball game at half.
We had it sponsored and everything. We did some work this week.
Yeah, no kidding. We're going to leave that alone. But a 7-0 game at half, and you felt like everybody had talked about going into the week that the outside looking in, it was supposed to be a runaway for Appalachian State. It's a team that came in 9-2, 6-1 in conference play. Appalachian State, on paper, there was no reason for Georgia Southern to show up. But at the end of the day, for Georgia Southern and Appalachian State, when those two get together, there was always a reason to show up. And that's why there were almost, what did the attendance end up being up there?
Just over
28,000?
Yeah. That's for a 3-8 team.
Yeah. And so you can't tell me Appalachian State already knows they're going to be in the Sun Belt Championship game this weekend against Louisiana. We'll dive into that plenty more as we go throughout this week's edition. A lot of storylines going on there. But, and we talked about it with Adam Winton before the game, you know that this rivalry means something when a game against a 3-8 team means something like it does when Georgia Southern and App State get together.
I think if it's anybody else in the league, they probably would have rested some guys.
Yeah,
I really
no doubt.
Do. And that's no disrespect.
I don't think Hennigan would have played. Well, no. Hennigan would have played because he plays every play.
There's no disrespect to the way Sean Clark handled it, but knowing that Georgia Southern was that game, it wasn't going to affect how they were going to go against Louisiana. But knowing that Georgia Southern was there for their senior day to wrap up the season, they were going to get App's best punch. That doesn't mean they were going to dominate them, because as we saw, the defense was outstanding for about 2.5 quarters, very similar to BYU the week before. But again, the depth issues, missing some tackles, giving up the kickoff return early in the fourth quarter. It's unfortunate how it ended, but I'll always have a great respect for these seniors, especially the fifth and sixth year guys like a Randy Wade and a Daryl Baker, and the guys on this team who could have bolted after a 1-3 start and a coaching change, but they still saw it through and still tried to make the most of it.
Yeah, and when you look through this game, Russ and I brought it up on the Ford Locker Room wrap-up, and we knew it was going to have to be you to find it because you were the only one that could find it, I think. The last time, because Georgia Southern and Appalachian State, neither team over 100 yards rushing, App State with 94, Georgia Southern with 87. The Eagles did a really good job stopping App State's rushing attack. Nate Noel was the top rusher in the Sun Belt Conference coming in, and you wouldn't have known it looking at him Saturday. But the first time in this series, you texted me yesterday, the first time ever Georgia Southern and App State both held each other under 100 yards.
It's pretty wild.
That's crazy.
It took 37 games for it to happen.
That's crazy. You would have thought, and it's happened where one team is under 100 yards in the game, whatever. But both teams holding each other under 100 yards.
You know, we could bring up the 09 game, but I'm sure Eagle fans wouldn't care to remember that one very much. But we covered this last week that if there's been one defense in this league that has slowed App's run game down, I'm not going to say they stopped it because that's extremely tough to do with as dedicated as they are to it. Who better than Scott Sloan, somebody that was up there for 8 years as a defensive assistant, eventually ascending to the role of co-defensive coordinator. And unfortunately, from that standpoint, he just coached his last game as an Eagle assistant on Saturday. The only assistant that was retained was interim head coach Kevin Woodley. We don't know what his role was going to be yet on Clay Helton's staff. But I do feel for those guys that have been there for at least 4 years, and somebody like a Jeremy Ryle's been here for 6 years over the course of three different head coaches.
Yeah.
But this defense has consistently been able to contain App's running game, whether it's been Marcus Cox, Jalen Moore, Marcus Williams, or in this case, Noel and Peoples. They just couldn't get their running game going.
No.
At all.
No. And with an offensive line like Appalachian State, who I think Terry called them nasty throughout the entirety of the game, and they are always a good offensive line, a lot of experience on that offensive line, but Georgia Southern just had their way with it.
It's about up front. Yeah, C.J. Wright, Justin L. I know Justin L.'s been playing her for about 2 months, but he was phenomenal. What could have been Dylan Springer's final game, he comes up with the sack. He nearly not only just had a safety, he almost had a fumble recovery in the end zone, knocking that ball away from Chase Bryce. Another great effort from Eldrick Robinson. Mike Edwards had a career-high 10 tackles, but just the deep passes again. Yeah. And it wasn't as if they were these great throws. You had multiple times where Sutton and Hennigan, sixth-year receivers, adjusting to the football, and it cost the Eagles just on those two plays. I think it was more than 100 yards on just those two catches.
Ends up being a 27-3 Appalachian State victory for Georgia Southern. The Eagles finished the regular season 3-9, 2-6 in conference play. There's a couple of notes that I think get overlooked, and you and I were talking, I think it was yesterday, a couple of notes that get overlooked of what, and we've talked about it. It's been a long season. It's been a tough season for this team. But there are still good that you pull from this season. Anthony Beck is somebody we've talked about a lot this year, and he set a couple of records this year.
He set Georgia Southern's single-season punt average record, nearly 45 yards a punt. He broke that record by nearly 2 full yards. It was Ryan Nowicki back in 2013. He also had 16 punts of 50-plus. That broke the school record by 3. He came in needing just 1 to break the record. He ends up with 3 up at the Rock because of the higher elevation. We expected him to at least get 1, but there was an instance where he pinned App State inside the 10, and he's just gotten so good at that. You hate to think that your punter might be your team MVP, but largely it's a season that you don't want to talk about, and it stinks to think about it that way. 2017, very similar. Seemed like it was just so many big plays, not being able to stay on the field. But to have that kind of weapon like a Beck, who may have been responsible for about 30 points this year by himself with the way that he changed field position, he's got a shot to be an All-American this year. I don't think he's going to get that. There's a couple of guys with higher averages, and Matt Ariza out at San Diego State has about 50 yards a punt this year, so he's just had a ridiculous year. But next year for Beck, I think that there is a realistic chance that he could have an All-American season.
Yeah, and that's the crazy thing. It seems like Beck has been around Statesboro for about 10 years now, a lot like Georgia Southern Fields with Hennigan and guys like that up at App. But he's still coming back. You still have him for another year.
I mean, technically, you'd have him for 2 more years.
That's true.
Now, that all depends on how he wants to use the remainder of his eligibility when you toss in the COVID waiver year. But if he continues at this pace, he's going to shatter every punting record Georgia Southern has.
Oh, no doubt.
He already owns 3 of the top 5 individual season averages, and he still potentially would have 2 more to go even better.
That's crazy.
He could be one of the best punters that's ever come through this conference. That's another one to think about.
Yeah.
Because he was second in the league this year behind Louisiana's Reese Burns. But the Cajuns have 2 games left still. Championship this Saturday, which we'll talk about, and then whatever bowl game they go to. Now, I'm not saying I want Burns to go out and kick a couple of 11-yarders and screw up his average that much, but there's still potential that Beck could lead the league in punting average by season's end.
Just need a couple of blocks.
Just a shank, maybe a block.
Yeah, just off the foot, maybe just a little bit of the finger so it only goes about 5 yards. It's not a full block.
Head it forward, hit it with your elbow. I don't know, just miss it somehow. I don't know.
Swing and miss.
I'm sure Jay would love that.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Not at all.
Craig would not be happy either. But the season comes to a close for Georgia Southern football, and it kind of leads us into our next point. Cody Anderson on Facebook Live asking, any idea when football coaching announcements will be made? It did come out yesterday that as far as on-field coaches, Kevin Whitley was the only one that is retained by head coach Clay Helton, who now officially begins his regime in Georgia Southern football as of yesterday, technically, I guess. He is the official head coach for Georgia Southern football. Kevin Whitley, the only one that's being retained as far as the on-field coaches. And I think this is a really classy move by Coach Helton, and that's not to say the only reason that Kevin Whitley is getting retained is because he was the interim head coach and just happened to have the position. But one, he earned that position by being the Georgia Southern guy, being the guy, and we talked about this throughout the last couple of weeks, he is the guy that was perfect to lead this program through this transition, and that shows what kind of person he is, what kind of coach he is, everything around what Kevin Whitley is, that he is retained by the next staff in Clay Helton.
If there was a way that you could get a picture of his heart, I'm not so certain that there's not a GS tattoo on it somewhere.
Kind of like Lenny's arm.
Just think about what that meant to coach, to be the head guy in tough circumstances, to be that for 8 weeks, and then to get the opportunity to stay here under a new staff. That's an extremely high level of respect that Coach Helton is showing for him, and it falls in line with what he has done ever since he got to Statesboro 4 weeks ago, letting these coaches finish out the season, not trying to take over a situation where he didn't know anybody and mess with scheme, make complete overhauls when there was still a season to finish. And this is probably not going to be a very popular opinion, but I'm going to say it anyway. The last 8 games of the season were not about wins and losses. They weren't.
I see where you're going.
Once you got to 1-3 and once a change was made, you had to be as positive as you could for the guys that were still wearing the uniform and for the people that were going to come in to follow. Because at that point, you couldn't know what the future was going to hold, not just for 22. Because you didn't know Clay Helton was going to get the job at that point.
Yeah.
It was not about getting to 6 wins and getting to a bowl, winning a conference championship. It was about just being as steady as possible. Were there a lot of hiccups? You bet. And that's what you get when you have so many injuries, a lack of depth at key positions. But now these are things that Coach Helton has had a chance to see for the last month, have a chance to evaluate, and now he can begin to put his stamp on this program. So there is a positive to be found in all of this.
As far as what the new staff looks like, I would guess in the next 2 to 3 weeks you will have some idea of where the staff is headed. I think, and Russ and I talked about it on the Ford Locker Room wrap-up up at App, that's one of the positives of having Clay Helton here for the last month.
Without a doubt.
You're not just now starting the search for the new coach, get 2 weeks down the road, announce that Coach Helton is here, then it's another 2 to 3 weeks before you get coordinators, then another week and a half before you get position coaches. You can start that process halfway through right now, if not more so than halfway through right now. So it wouldn't surprise me in the next week or two you start to see at least some coaches getting to town, getting announced. I think it's going to be relatively quick, and that's just personal opinion. There's nothing out there.
Right.
But I think once bowl games start to happen, once some bowl games start to get done, is when you're going to start to see the names roll through.
And I know what everybody's thinking. There's the early signing period, which is 16 days from now, so you'd like to think there's going to be more in place than just the head coach. But I think this image gets out there that, okay, the season's over with. He walks into an empty office, rubs his hands together, and say, okay, who do we need to go get? No, yeah. That's not how this went at all. He's been here for 4 weeks, knows exactly who's already been committed. You've seen all the offers that have been put out to a lot of guys in this region,
yeah.
Which, I mean, for someone like you that covers Southeast Bullock, that's got to be a really gratifying thing to see the work that those guys have put in following their season. And as great as it was, getting back to the playoffs, winning a game for the first time in nearly 50 years, that their talent is being recognized by the school that's just down the road from them.
And going back to Coach Whitley staying on staff, I think it's really smart by Coach Helton, and I don't know if this played a factor in it at all. I could just be making something out of nothing. Clay Helton, in his past, has been more of an offensive-minded guy. You have somebody in Kevin Whitley, who is an All-American on defense here at Georgia Southern, knows the defensive side of the football better than most. You've got an offensive guy and a defensive guy, and that's where you start your staff. And especially with, like you talked about, the early signing period coming up December 15th, just a couple of weeks away, I would expect you have some, at least some idea what coaches are going to be coming in. But at very least right now, I know you've got official visits starting this weekend for Georgia Southern. You at least have an offensive guy, a defensive guy that you know are going to be here and give you some kind of idea of where the path of this program is headed.
And from the standpoint of what the offense is going to look like, Coach Helton has experience with a pro style and an air raid style within the last 4 years because they changed their scheme in 2019, and a guy like Keaton Slovis, who was heavily under-recruited, wasn't even known until he exploded for USC, the change in scheme greatly helped him become a national name. And in the case of Whitley, I know people want to look at this year's defensive numbers as not being very good, and look, they're not. They weren't for a lot of different reasons. But remember a year ago when Georgia Southern led the country in turnovers forced and led the country in interceptions? There's a reason why. There's a pretty big reason why.
It'll be interesting to see what the next couple of weeks look like, and not just at Georgia Southern by any means of the imagination, what this coaching carousel looks like across the country.
I don't think carousel's nice enough. I think this is a full-blown amusement park.
I think this is a tilt-a-whirl. But part of that also bleeds over into the Sun Belt Conference. Came out earlier today that Rich Rodriguez, the offensive coordinator for ULM, going to be making the trip up to Jacksonville State to be the new head coach there. And then the big news that came out yesterday, Billy Napier, the head coach at Louisiana, making the move. He's going to be the head man down at University of Florida. We've talked about Napier the last couple of years, getting to visit with him a little bit, getting to talk with Jay Walker, the voice of the Raging Cajuns, and that relationship. Really, really happy for Coach Napier. And Keith Gill, the commissioner of the Sun Belt Conference, talked about it on the media availability leading into the conference championship game. It just speaks volumes to what this Sun Belt Conference football footprint is now, where you've got a guy that had built a program at Louisiana, helped take it to another level, and now moves on to be the head coach of one of the more storied programs in college football.
The Cajuns had never won 10-plus games in back-to-back seasons before he got there. They've now done it 3 straight years.
Weren't you telling us that the Cajuns have never won championship since 70? Well,
two things. One, yes, they have not won an outright conference title since 70. They've shared it a couple times, 05 and 12, but that's when the league was in a much different place than what it is now. But also, Napier never lost to a West Division team.
Wow, I didn't think about that.
How wild is that?
We had brought that up a couple of times, but I hadn't thought about that in kind of the finality of it.
So they have the last time they won an outright league title was more than 20 years before Jay even got there.
Good night.
So
Jay was what, 40?
Jay, I love you so much. If perchance they beat App State on Saturday, that is historic on so many different levels.
Yeah.
It should be a full house. There's rumored to be at least 40,000 that are going there.
Good night.
Napier's last game. It's Jay's 30th year, so he has seen more Cajun football than maybe anybody else. A chance to win a title. It's Levi Lewis's last game, sixth-year senior that came back for a chance like this. Ken Marks, their offensive lineman, in his seventh year, came back for a chance just like this. They've already defeated App pretty convincingly earlier this year. I know App's a small favorite going to Acadiana, but
yeah, I don't get that.
I don't either, but that just adds so many more layers to what's already going to be an emotional Saturday.
Yeah.
I wish we could be there for it, because that's the one that I would really like to see.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. But at 40,000 people, there's not room for us.
We've been there when it's had 5,000 people because of COVID, but if they end up getting 40 there, I hope somebody's able to snap a picture of that. I'm sure they will, but I'd love to be able to see what that place looks like, because I think that that's the biggest stadium in the league.
We might have to FaceTime Dan McDonald. Or
nope,
Craig.
That predates him.
Good night.
Because he spent time at a number of other schools in the state. That would predate him.
Wow.
I think.
I would think that would be nobody there. I mean, I don't know all the inner workings of what they're...
Unless you're digging deep into some donors.
Yeah. Or somebody like a Roger.
That would predate Roger. Roger got here in 77?
No.
I mean, we didn't get,
no.
didn't re-add football until 81, but Roger got here in 77. That'd be the equivalent of Georgia Southern beating Douglas Junior College back in the 30s.
Yeah.
Before the shutdown, something like that.
Yikes.
Or Oglethorpe or something wild like that.
That hurts my head.
Imagine us getting ready for an Oglethorpe game.
No. No. Spent way too much time there. No. But it'll be a 3:30 kickoff on Saturday for Appalachian State heading to Louisiana to take on the Raging Cajuns in the Sun Belt Conference Championship game. That's going to be a really good game, and that's what you want, because you can give you all the hubbub that Coastal Carolina's been through this year, and when they didn't have Grayson McCall, when they did have Grayson McCall, whatever. That's the two best teams in this league playing each other.
There have been four opportunities to play a championship game. This is only the third one, because a year ago it didn't happen between the Cajuns and Coastal. So that means App and Louisiana are meeting for all three of these title games. And App won the first two in Boone.
Yeah.
And this would, we've heard this from national pundits about how, you know, Georgia's in the middle of what could be a national championship season, but they need to beat Alabama this weekend to really prove to themselves that this is a different year, this is a different team, and they're on the verge of doing something. For the Cajuns, I think that they need this win, even though they already beat them earlier this year, they need this win to show that this is truly the step that was made.
Yeah. I think it would be the perfect final step in the Louisiana history for Billy Napier.
He doesn't.
And I know it's still up in the air whether he's going to coach the bowl game or not, but you know he's going to be there Saturday. You know that place is going to be packed to the gill. There's going to be a lot of boudin out in the parking lot.
Oh.
There's going to be a lot of etouffee out in the parking lot.
He does
Pastelaya.
He does not wear a hat, but if this goes the way that they hope it does, he would metaphorically take his hat off and tip it to those fans.
They might douse him with the other team's Powerade coolers.
Because we know how the Cajuns are.
Yeah, they'll douse him in everything.
We know how the Cajuns are.
They'll go pour some etouffee on him.
That's an outstanding fan base.
No doubt.
And to go this long in between outright championships, that would really be something for them. I mean, for App, they've already won four. They shared two. They've won the two since moving to the conference championship format. Either way, it's going to be something to watch for sure.
It'll be interesting to see where Louisiana goes as far as their next step in the coaching search to replace Billy Napier. That is not somebody that I envy, having to replace somebody like Billy Napier, because this is not just him leaving on a whim. He's had plenty of different opportunities to go to a Power 5 school, but he has made it very clear that he was building something at Louisiana and it was going to take a near-perfect situation. And somewhere like Florida, with somebody that has so many ties to the Southeast, that's your near-perfect situation that you can't turn down.
In a way, you don't envy the person that has to follow him, but at the same time, everything's set for you.
Oh, for sure.
They just got the $15 million naming rights from Our Lady of Lourdes before the season. They got another major gift not too long ago. Cajun Field is going to undergo major renovations within the next couple of years to get it up to code. It's probably a situation for them facility-wise that needs to be addressed more than any others, because they've already taken care of the Cajun Dome. They've already renovated softball. They've renovated Tigmore Field for baseball. The football was the one that's been rumored for about a decade now, but different shades of red tape have kept them from getting that going.
I think they call it vermilion tape down there.
Yes, they do. But now that it's going to happen, the rest of the league is even more on notice because of what they've already done and what they may do now that they're going to get everything else.
That'll wrap things up for Georgia Southern football 2021. Again, not the season you're looking for the Eagles, but a lot of good things that you can pull from this season individually. But a 3-9 final record, 2-6 in Sun Belt Conference play, and then the Sun Belt will wrap up the football schedule officially after the Sun Belt Conference championship game, and then you get into bowl season starting, I believe, the 18th, I think is the first bowl.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Something like that. But Georgia Southern women's basketball in action this past week. We talked about it last week, how they were going to have a late night game as far as Eastern time was concerned.
Yeah, very late.
At San Diego Christian on Monday, they got the win 100-60 just outside of San Diego against San Diego Christian. And then after Thanksgiving, returned to Hander Fieldhouse for the Gata Turkey Throwdown. Did that on Friday against South Carolina State with a 72-57 victory, and then fell to Indiana State on Saturday, 71-67. That Saturday game was a tough one for Georgia Southern, 0-14 from behind the arc.
It's tough to win.
And Georgia Southern has really struggled so far, at least especially the last couple of games. The last three games, just 15% from three, but as tough as it's been from behind the arc, from twos, Georgia Southern has been money, shooting 57% from two.
That's wild.
It's crazy. Well, but a part of it goes back to the transition offense that Coach Howard wants to run.
When you have Eden, when you have Lydia, you know you got two girls that you can dump it into in the post. And most of the time when you can beat teams down the floor, that makes things that much easier. But to do that, you've got to force missed shots. You can't take the ball out of the net. You got to take it off the rim. So the more missed shots you force, the more you can run the offense you want to run.
That will lead into the lone game this week for Georgia Southern women's basketball. They will head to Charleston, South Carolina to take on the CFC Cougars tomorrow, a 5 o'clock tip-off from TD Arena. It's a College of Charleston team, 3-2 on the season, and it's a very experienced College of Charleston team with five seniors in their rotation. One grad transfer coming in, Peyton Martin, and if that name sounds familiar, it should. Transferred in from Arkansas State, was the leading scorer for Arkansas State the last 2 years she was in Jonesboro, and now scoring about 13 a game, rebounding almost 10 a game. It was for CFC through the first five games of the season. Again, they're 3-2 on the year. They won their first three, have dropped the last two, but had a little bit of injury issues with Grace Abercrombie missing the past two games, and she's scoring about 12 a game.
That's a program that has a good bit of history. Nancy Wilson was the coach here for nearly three decades, and then Natasha Adair takes over. She ends up getting the job at Georgetown after a brief tenure, but she was successful, and now with Coach Harmony there. That's also a really good setup in terms of them being able to share TD Arena with the men. That's one of the better arenas that Georgia Southern is going to play in. The men just hosted North Carolina not too long ago. They've got the Charleston Classic there every year. So that's a program that, even though the men get a lot of the buzz, that's a women's program that has quietly done a really good job.
And even though this is a team that Georgia Southern played every year from 98 until 2013, this will be my first trip to TD Arena.
You will enjoy it.
I've never been.
About 5,000 seats. It's the perfect size for... It was built at the time for the Southern Conference, but now that they transitioned into the Colonial, it is the perfect size for mid-major basketball.
It'll be the first of a doubleheader. Their men will be taking on Tulane about 30 minutes after the conclusion of the women's game.
So you're going to have to say hi to Ron Hunter and Corey Glory for us.
I'll say hey to Glory. No doubt about that.
I'd like to know how Coach is doing. I'd be very curious.
I'll let you know how Corey's doing next week. Georgia Southern men's basketball. Watch that stool. Georgia Southern men's basketball, a Black Friday event up in Atlanta, took on the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets up at McCamish Pavilion. First and foremost, one, you get to catch up with any of our friends up there. Andy Demetra, Wiley Ballard.
Did not see Wiley,
that's
unfortunately. But saw Andy for a couple seconds before tip, and then we talked for about 10, 15 minutes after the game was over. Saw Glenn Ingram for about 10 seconds in the middle of the game.
I think that's the most anybody sees him anymore.
Well, they had clean old-fashioned hate Saturday, and that was a noon kickoff, so I'm sure there was a lot that needed to be done over at Bobby Dodd. And basketball-wise, I think I'd mentioned, I'd seen McCamish when it first reopened back in 2012, when I was still with the Citadel. It looks the same. The way the natural light comes in, the opposing side, the chairs, how they circle the arena, and the way that they do the lights, so it feels like a theater. They were able to block out the visitors and put all the focus on the court like you would see out in Los Angeles at the Staples Center. And I think Georgia Southern should have won the game. I mean, the Eagles were a little bit short, but Georgia Tech had the flu going around the team. I think six guys had to miss, and their top guy, Michael DeVoe, who had missed the game against Charleston Southern on Monday, didn't play the first 10 minutes. It didn't look like he was going to go. He had a hooded sweatshirt at the end of the bench, and all of a sudden, Josh Pastner looks at him and says, come on. But by the time he was in, it was already a double-digit deficit. And he started to score, but the Eagles didn't stop scoring. And they got up by 14. They were up 12 at the half. But the first 4 minutes of the second half, it was just a killer, unfortunately.
You had three Eagles in double figures. Elijah McCadden with 14 points and 7 rebounds. 14 as well for Cam Bryant. He's been really good as of late, especially. Yeah. Kamari Brown with 13 points and 6 rebounds as well. But it's like we've talked about before. Georgia Southern outscored Georgia Tech 39-27 in the first half.
Yeah.
But Georgia Tech, and you just mentioned it, the first couple of minutes of that second half was really what the killer was.
They jumped out. It was 18-3 to start the second half. And it felt like they were going to run away with it. But the biggest the lead got was 7. And that was after Georgia Southern was enforced with a technical foul with about 3.5 minutes left. But even so, the Eagles stuck with it. Got an Andre Savrasov tip in. Cam Bryant hit a huge 3 from right in front of the scorer's table. Cut it to 1 with, I think it was 53 seconds left. Next time down, Michael DeVoe turns the ball over. And the Eagles have a 2-on-1 run out with a chance to take the lead late. But Tech got back in transition. And then Elijah McCadden ends up taking a leaner. It could have been a foul. It was one of those 50-50 calls that you're not going to get when you're in an ACC gym. Even so, DeVoe makes 1 of 2. Eagles had a chance to make a 3 at the horn, but still an experience that they'll be able to learn from. And deep down, I think that they went back to Statesboro. They let one slip because everybody on that floor believed that they should have won the game.
Ended up being a 61-59 loss at the hands of the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, but the first time that Georgia Southern has seen Georgia Tech in a number of years, and I think
23
you were saying
years.
23 years. And that's a series, we talked about it last week, you hadn't seen Georgia Tech in 23 years. You saw Georgia a couple of years ago for the first time in a long time.
Been more than 2 decades.
It just makes sense that Georgia Southern, Mercer, Georgia Tech, Georgia all play each other in not just basketball, but pretty much everything. It just makes too much sense to keep, and especially a game that if it turns into a bye game, keep the money in the state.
Yeah. I know we talked about that with football before, yeah. But we also know that Georgia and Georgia Tech are not going to be playing the Eagles in football.
No, I don't believe Jeff Collins is going to be making a call to Helton anytime soon.
It's unfortunate, but with basketball, knowing that you've got a schedule 30 games a year, and you've got those non-conference slots you've got to fill, it would make too much sense, because I've said this before, Georgia Southern and Mercer in basketball, they should play every year.
Yeah,
and I hope that they've played the last 4 years now, so I'm hoping that continues. Throw in Kennesaw State. Georgia State should be in that mix. Georgia, Georgia Tech, I know that they need to schedule lower to pick up wins, and Georgia Southern, of course, does the same. Still got home games against Covenant and against Carver. I know they're going to be part of it. We wish they weren't, but they've got to be because scheduling's difficult. But if you could get everybody on the same scheduling page and just play each other, that takes care of 4 and 5 games itself.
Georgia Southern will look ahead to one game this week on Wednesday. They will make their way up to Moorhead, Kentucky to take on Moorhead State. Be leaving tomorrow, I believe, to fly up there, but then you'll be bussing back long old bus ride back from Moorhead, Kentucky.
From what I saw, it's about 9.5 or 10 hours to get back, but having spent a season in Bowling Green, Kentucky, all of those bus rides were about that long, but that was 6.5 years ago. Moorhead State's really good, though. Very good team.
It's a team that won the Ohio Valley a year ago, made it to the NCAA tournament, and even though the record isn't exactly dominant, quote-unquote, it's still a really good Moorhead State team.
Yeah, they got 2 losses against SEC teams. They got blown out by Auburn to start the year. They lost one of their best defenders coming in off the bench. He only played 46 seconds, but Jalen Hall from Wright State messed up his ankle, and his status for the rest of the year is uncertain. Also lost to Mississippi State, a game that they led late in the first half. Also got run a little bit by UAB. They lost by 14. They've defeated 2 non-D1s at home, so they haven't had a D1 opponent come into Ellis Johnson Arena yet. But they're going to see one of the best big men that they'll see all year in Jani Broom. Freshman last year, OVC freshman of the year. He averaged 13-9. Gets the year back, so technically a second-year freshman. He's averaging 14-10 this season. They run their offense entirely through him. It's different now with a game that's so guard-oriented and positionless. They want to get it into their five-man in the low post. And as a left-hander, he creates matchup problems. He's a really, really good one.
This is one of those games that if you're not a diehard basketball fan, it's one on just looking at the names that Georgia Southern you think would dominate, but it's a really good Moorhead State program that has been really good for a couple of years now, and this isn't one that's a go up there and just clean house, come home.
The Ohio Valley as a league isn't that strong.
Yeah.
The bottom part is not very good. I mean, teams like Tennessee State, Tennessee Martin have struggled over the years. But the top half is really good.
Yeah.
Morehead State had to beat Belmont to get to the NCAA tournament last year, and that was the Belmont team that was everybody's Cinderella, unless you're a Gonzaga fan, but they're not really Cinderella anymore.
Jake Allsmiller.
God love him. But for Belmont, they were the team that was going to go to the NCAA tournament, maybe go to the Sweet 16. Morehead State upsets them in the OVC finals. They end up getting a 14 seed. They lose to West Virginia. But there is some thought that this year's team is going to end up being even better than last year's team was.
That's crazy.
And they lost three of their top guys from last year, too, including two of their best defenders. But they've got really physical guards that rebound well. Talon Cooper is somebody that could be a triple-double every night. He's averaging 9, 6, and 6 so far this season. He's missed three different triple-doubles this year, and they played 7 games. They just have so many different ways that they can hurt you. And that arena is tough to play in as well. They've won 15 of their last 16 out there.
Again, that'll be a 7 o'clock tip-off on Wednesday evening. We'll be on the air with the Cutwater Spirits countdown to tip-off at 6:30 as Georgia Southern takes on Morehead State, and then they will take a week off before Carver comes into Hanner Fieldhouse the following Wednesday, December the 8th, but we will dive into Carver and all of that.
That budding rivalry with Carver. Played him twice last year in 5 days.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that because they were in the multi-team event down
we'll
in Florida.
There. I don't want to do that yet. We'll get there.
I forgot about that.
We'll get there.
Wow.
Trust me, we'll get there.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, that's the crazy part of it. Everybody's like, man, y'all remember so much. Hey, no, we don't. There's most of the stuff we remember, but then there's stuff I'm like, wow, that was just last year. How about that?
You need to remember that you forgot it.
Yes. Mm. Sure. Yeah. Before we wrap up this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, have to get your thoughts on Thanksgiving. I know you were having to travel up to Atlanta later part of the day. How was the Thanksgiving?
Very, very nice. So I had a chance to eat with the team on Wednesday night, then left on Thursday to head up to Atlanta. Got the workout in Thursday night and had to do it that way because it was a noon tip on Friday.
Yeah.
But it also bought you some time on the back end because having to go right from there to Boone to finish up the season for an earlier kickoff on Saturday. But just being able to play Georgia Tech again was cool. We get to see him in baseball.
Yeah.
We saw him in football in
most years.
Yeah. Saw him in football in 2016, but as we mentioned, that's probably not going to be happening anytime soon. But just to get them back on the court, that was neat.
Nice to get up to the 404, as they say up there.
And should have won the game.
Did you get any Waffle House while you were there?
No. No, it was all out.
I think that's a sin. Oh, it's never out.
They were all out.
Don't you worry. It's never out.
I kept trying to look for a styrofoam cup, but mysteriously they were all missing.
I guarantee you Glenn Ingram has a sleeve of them in the back of his truck.
Didn't get that far. I literally saw him for maybe 10 seconds.
Sounds about right.
It was in the middle of a media timeout. I got tapped on the shoulder. Look, oh, hello.
Hey, bud.
And he looked like he was on his way back to the football stadium to fix something.
One of his 7 all-access passes.
Oh, if there's an all-access pass to have, he has it.
But Georgia Southern, again, women's basketball tomorrow night at College of Charleston. 5 o'clock the tip-off, 4:30 the airtime with the Cutwater Spirits tailgate, or the Cutwater Spirits countdown to tip-off. Still got to get in
football
that mindset.
Football. See, in baseball, it's going to be on deck circle, not tip-off.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there when we get there. But tomorrow, Chad Jackson and I will have the call for you for Georgia Southern against CFC. You can hear it on 99.3 WPTB in town.
Where are you going to eat tomorrow in Charleston?
I don't know. I don't know what I'm having for dinner tonight.
All the times we have been to Charleston for baseball, I've shown you everything that city has.
Correct. And I was going to ask you when we got done what I should eat.
Okay.
So what should I eat? Because Chad and I are going to be leaving about 10:30, 11 tomorrow.
Well, you just eat somewhere with chicken tenders or cheeseburgers with ketchup and mustard.
Easy. Easy.
The menu for this one, he doesn't need a menu.
Easy.
He doesn't need a menu.
So where do I go? Mr. Charleston?
What have you liked the most?
See, I can never remember. I know we always pass that barbecue place. Like, we're going to stop there next time. We still haven't stopped.
I thought we went to Home Team Barbecue. I thought we went there once.
We might have. We always end up at the...
Early Bird
Diner. Bluebird
Diner.
Early
Bird Diner.
Yeah,
really
that
good
one.
Chicken and waffles. Swear by it. They do this honey mustard with syrup. It's...
We went to... what was that?
What?
Did you just turn Italian?
Well, I'm an eighth Italian.
Well, the eighth just came out. We went to that seafood place right on the river one time with Draper.
Charleston Crab House. And also California Dreamin'. We've been there.
Sure. So where do I need to go? Do I need to branch out or do I go to one of the U's?
Are you going to have Chad with you?
Yes.
All right, you've got a good foundation.
Uh-huh.
See what he's in the mood for.
Okay.
And just say, I know a place. And barbecue.
Got to get our pie on the way there.
Yeah, you got to make sure it's open. Last time we tried to go there, it was closed.
Yeah, I was not happy.
But the one up the road was.
Yeah, but it's on the other side.
And there's no turn.
No, there's no need for that.
We like to travel.
No, we like to eat when we travel.
Oh, yeah, but you got to do one to do the other.
That's true. I like traveling. Do you like traveling? And I know this is completely off on a tangent and nobody may care about this, but we have to travel a lot. We tell a lot of stories about traveling. I really enjoy traveling.
Get to see new places.
Yeah, I love traveling. I want to go all over the place.
And with basketball, baseball, we do a lot more of it because you're gone multiple days.
Yeah, you get to see more of it. It's not stop in, go to a stadium, and get on out.
Yeah, with football, you're there the afternoon before you're playing, you're out.
Yeah.
With basketball, when you've got the Thursday-Saturday split, you're leaving Wednesday. You're not back until Sunday.
Yeah.
So you're going, most of the time, it's two different places in the same state. And we've been in the Sun Belt for long enough that we know the spots there. We know the people there. Now we know in Troy we need to go get a Kaylee Tater.
Tater. Yep. I still didn't get a Kaylee Tater because we were coming over day of.
But... We know places we can go.
Oh, no doubt.
But we can also branch out and find new things.
Oh, for sure.
Because the way that I look at it, if we weren't traveling, we'd want to. But when you're in the middle of it and you're on the road for so long, you say, I can't wait to get back home. It throws you in the other direction. But our best stories come from on the road.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Most of them we can't tell.
That's an accurate statement as well. Where's your favorite place we've gone?
Oh. Everywhere, or?
Sure. Then I know we're getting down a deep rabbit hole here, but that's why they call it a podcast. We can talk about whatever we want.
Man.
I don't know that I can narrow mine down. I really liked Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Been there with women's basketball and with football. I loved Oklahoma.
Yeah, that was a cool trip.
Loved Oklahoma. Really like anything in Texas, East Texas. El Paso, it's fine.
We got to spend 2 days in L.A. a couple years ago for basketball, that two-week trip when we went to Bakersfield.
That's right. You were solo that one. You brought me back a T-shirt.
That was a polo.
Same thing.
The one I am really looking forward to, so that's a lot of places we've been to try to single it out. I'm next year for football, Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yeah, I've had that one circled for a while.
I'm just telling you, that's a once-in-a-lifetime deal. They're not very good right now, but you will feel the tradition of that place as soon as you step in Lincoln.
Yeah, I was about to say, you've had that one circled for a while. Because didn't you grow up a Nebraska fan?
Grew up a Nebraska football fan.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. So knowing that Scott Frost is still going to be the head coach is a little bit of a geek moment, and it'd be even better if Georgia Southern can go out there and beat Nebraska. I know they're not their standard, and they haven't been for a while, but... That immediately becomes a game where Georgia Southern can not only perform well, and I have no idea what they're going to look like next year with Clay Helton as the head coach, but I just know now that that is a game that, at its face, is an extremely winnable game next year.
As everything starts to slow down a little bit around Georgia Southern Athletics, getting into the holiday mode, but you still got Georgia Southern men's and women's basketball. Again, women's basketball tomorrow at Charleston, 5 o'clock the tip-off, 4:30 the airtime. for the Cutwater Spirits countdown to tip-off. And then on Wednesday, Georgia Southern men's basketball takes on Morehead State. 7 o'clock the tip-off. We're on the air across the Georgia Southern Sports Network starting at 6:30 with a Cutwater Spirits countdown to tip-off. Until next week, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.